It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
This month's book is Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson. S.J. Watson's debut novel is one of the standout books of 2014. It follows the life of Christine, a woman who wakes every morning to find her personal memories have been erased, leaving her not knowing who she is, where she lives, or who the man she lives with might be. She can still recall a lot of information about the world in general. She recognises everyday objects and can cook, read and speak. She has a sense of the past, but only in very general terms. Something very bad has happened to her, and she cannot even recognise her own reflection in the mirror. The story is told by Christine, the ultimate unreliable narrator. After the initial confusion and fear she feels on waking next to a man who is a stranger, she receives a phone call from a Dr. Nash. He is working with her to help her recover her memory, and an important part of this is a diary, where Christine writes everything she does, thinks, and remembers over each day. He calls her to tell her where to find this book, as she's forgotten about it overnight. Over time, this book enables Christine to build a picture of herself and her life, though it still has many strange gaps. Gradually, she begins to suspect her husband, Ben, is not being completely honest with her, and the sense of her growing fear and insecurity runs through the narrative, gripping the reader and making them feel something of Christine's frustration at her loss.
You recovered, but your memory didn't improve. You stayed in the hospital for a couple of weeks, in the intensive care unit at first, and then the general ward. When you were well enough to be moved, you were transported back to London. Back to London? Of course. I was found near a hotel. I must have been away from home. I asked where it was. In Brighton, he said. Do you have any idea why you might have been there? Any connection to that area? I tried to think of holidays, but nothing came. No, I said. None. None that I know of, anyway. It might help to go there at some point, to see if you remember. I felt myself go cold. I shook my head. He nodded. Okay, well, there could be any number of reasons why you'd be there, of course. Yes, I thought, but only one that incorporated flickering candles and bunches of roses but didn't include my husband. Yes, I said, of course. I wondered if either of us was going to mention the word affair, and how Ben must have felt when he realised where I had been, and why. It struck me then, the reason Ben had not given me the real explanation for my amnesia. Why would he want to remind me that once, however briefly, I had chosen another man over him? I felt a chill. I had chosen someone over my husband, and look at the price I had paid. What happened then, I said. Did I move back in with Ben? He shook his head. No, no, he said. You were still very ill. You had to stay in the hospital. For how long? You were in the general ward at first, for a few months, and then you were moved. He hesitated. I thought I would have to ask him to continue, and then said, to a psychiatric ward. The world shook me. A psychiatric ward? I imagined a fearful place full of crazy people, howling, deranged. I could not see myself there. Yes. But why? Why there? He spoke softly, but his tone betrayed annoyance. I felt suddenly convinced we had been through all this before, perhaps many times, presumably before I had begun to keep my journal. It was more secure, he said. You had made a reasonably recovery from your physical injuries by now, but your memory problems were at their worst. You didn't know who you were or where. You were exhibiting symptoms of paranoia, claiming the doctors were conspiring against you. You kept trying to escape. He waited. You were becoming increasingly unmanageable. You were moved for your own safety, as well as the safety of others.
Before I Go to Sleep works as a thriller, but it is far more than that. It addresses some of the fundamental questions about our identity and the role memory plays in making us who we are. Without any personal memories, Christine is powerless to act or to make any decisions for herself. She is completely dependent on Ben and Dr. Nash, and the question of who she should trust adds to the suspense as the novel moves towards its climax. Using her diary, Christine builds up a picture of herself and her life, discovering friends who she suspects Ben has kept away from her. She finally recalls something of the incident that left her without the ability to remember her past, and her memory does not match what Ben tells her each morning. Finally, she leaves the house alone in an attempt to uncover the truth about her accident, with shocking consequences.
At home, I sat down to read Ben's letter. I felt nervous. Would it tell me what I needed to know? Will I finally understand why Ben left me? But at the same time, excited. I felt sure it would. Felt certain that with it, with Ben and Claire, I will have everything I need. Darling Christine, this is the hardest thing I have ever had to do. Already I've kicked off with a cliche, but you know I'm not a writer. That was always you. So I'm sorry, but I'll do my best. By the time you read this, you'll know, but I've decided I have to leave you. I can't bear to write it, or even to think of it, but I have to. I have tried so hard to find another way, but I can't, believe me. You have to understand that I love you. I always have. I always will. I don't care what has happened or why. This isn't about revenge or anything like that. I haven't met anybody else. When you were in that coma, I realized just how much a part of me you are. I felt like I was dying every time I looked at you. I realized I didn't care what you were doing that night in Brighton or who you were seeing. I just wanted you to come back to me. And then you did. And I was so happy. You will never know how happy I was. The day they told me you were out of danger, that you wouldn't die, that you weren't going to leave me or us. Adam was just little, but I think he understood. When we realized you had no memory of what had happened, I thought it was a good thing. Can you believe that? I feel ashamed now, but I thought it was for the best. But then we realized that you were forgetting other things too, gradually, over time. At first it was the names of the people in the beds next to you, the doctors and nurses treating you. But you got worse. You forgot why you were in the hospital, why you weren't allowed to come home with me. You convinced yourself that the doctors were experimenting on you. When I took you home for a weekend, you didn't recognize our street, our house. Your cousin came to see you and you had no idea who she was. We took you back to the hospital and you had no idea where you were going. I think that's when things started to get difficult. You loved Adam so much. It shone out of your eyes when we arrived, and he would run over to you and into your arms, and you would pick him up and know who he was straight away. But then, I'm sorry, Chris, but I have to tell you this, you started to believe that Adam had been away from you when he was a baby. Every time you saw him, you thought that it was the first time since he was a few months old. I would ask him to tell you when he last saw you, and he would say, "Yesterday, Mummy," or "last week," but you didn't believe him. "What have you been telling him?" you'd say. "It's a lie." You started accusing me of keeping you locked there. You thought another woman was raising Adam as her own while you were in the hospital. One day I arrived, and you didn't recognize me. You became hysterical. You grabbed Adam when I wasn't looking and ran to the door to rescue him, I suppose, but he started screaming. He didn't understand why you'd do that. I took him home and tried to explain, but he didn't understand. He started being really frightened of you. It got worse. One day I called the hospital. I asked them what you were like when I wasn't there, when Adam wasn't there. "Describe her right now," I said. They said you were calm, happy. You were sitting in the chair next to your bed. "What's she doing?" I said. They said you were talking to one of the other patients, a friend of yours. Sometimes you played cards together. "Played cards?" I said. I couldn't believe it. They said you were good at cards. They had to explain the rules to you every day, but then you could beat just about anybody. "Is she happy?" I said. "Yes," they said. "Yes, she's always happy." "Does she remember me?" I said. "Adam?" "Not unless you're here," they said. think I knew then that one day I would have to leave you. I found you a place where you can live for as long as you need to. Somewhere you can be happy, because you will be happy without me, without Adam. You won't know us, and so you won't miss us. I love you so much, Chrissy. You must understand that. I love you more than I love anything. But I have to give our son a life he deserves. Soon he will be old enough to understand what's going on. I will not lie to him, Chris. I will explain the choices I've made. I will tell him that although he may want to see you very much, it would be enormously upsetting for him to do so. Maybe he will hate me, blame me. I hope not. But I want him to be happy. And I want you to be happy too. Even if you could only find that happiness without me. You've been in Waring House for a while now. You don't panic anymore. You have a sense of a routine. That's good. And so it's time for me to go.
This is a very well written and nicely paced book. Gradually, the reader becomes immersed in Christine's quest for an answer to her dilemma, following all the wrong turns and false assumptions with the narrator, until the truth is finally revealed. Christine, despite her lack of memories, is a forceful and sympathetic character, certainly the strongest in the book, and her quest is compelling and keeps the reader guessing right up to the end. I wanted to go on to learn more, and that is the highest praise any reader can give a book.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 308188 or visit our website, rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down.
And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution,
oh,
then
right.
you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Memories define us, so what if you lost yours every time you went to sleep? That's the overall overriding theme of the Book of the Month, Before I Go to Sleep. Rob Nichols is in the studio. Can't remember whether you've finished it or not, can you, Rob? Sorry, I couldn't resist it.
I thought I knew yesterday.
So in terms of that whole sequence, what did you make of what you read of S.J. Watson's Before I Go to Sleep?
It's an incredible opening that somebody wakes up and thinks that they're much younger than they are, looks in the mirror, gets a shock, looks at the person next to them, doesn't recognise where they are, thinks they should be living in a different house, a different time, and then gradually finds out that that's the way they wake up every single morning. And then that idea that you're wiped, that the slate's wiped clean each day. But as Jenny says, they're able to function in life because they do know language, they do recognise the world around them. It's just they don't recognise themselves in their own situation. And it could be quite a frightening book, couldn't it? It could be really, really dark, because it's twists and turns all the time. You're not sure which way it's going. And it could be unreadable, but it's not. And it's a tribute to the author that it makes it that you're actually drawn in, rather than think, this is just too dark, this is just too much. I can't face the fact that this person's going to wake up again not knowing anything.
I'm not sure whether the Financial Times didn't actually have their tongue in their cheek when they defined it as unforgettable. But it's just a different line. I thought for the FT that was unusual. The Daily Mirror, stunningly executed, completely gripping and slowly terrifying. I agree with you, Rob. I thought it was a very powerful start. I thought it was a very well-written debut novel. I got a little bit bored with the number of jingling genitalia lines that we had, to be blunt, because there's only so much where you think, look, please, you know, it's not worthy of comment, that particular side of things. I know from a certain angle you might sort of say, well, isn't it surprising? But, and I won't repeat that for obvious reasons, but there were areas there which for me I kind of felt that it didn't quite become. I mean, I'm interested it was awarded Crime Thriller of the Year, Jenny, because to me I have to say that all three of your books were much better crime thrillers than what we actually had here with Before I Go to Sleep. Sorry, S.J. Watson, and even if you're on the phone line now, you're not, or if you're listening to this, it worked as an interesting philosophical exercise. It worked. I can see why Ridley Scott will have liked the movie, liked the idea, and of sort of optioning it and so on. With, was it Rosamund Pike who? I forget.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, quite right. Yes. But somehow, I don't know. Didn't quite. I mean, I felt it could have. It could have actually lost about 60 pages quite comfortably, and kind of become much more effective. But maybe that's just me.
Well, thank you for your kind words. I don't know which crime thriller of the year it won. It wasn't the Crime Writers Association. I think it worked very well. It was quite well paced, but I think you're right. It could have been trimmed a little bit.
Rob, as I say, you haven't quite got to the end, so no spoilers, obviously, from that point of view.
And so I can't comment about whether it should be trimmed or not.
No, which is a fair point. What about some of those issues? Because clearly, when we deal with issues of the mind, Alzheimer's and a whole range of other factors come to the fore. Did you feel sympathy with Christine? Because I mean, I felt, you know, a lot of sympathy in terms of the character. I mean, it was almost as though it was coming from a speculative fiction sort of line in terms of, well, how can this happen? You know, it's like mind wipe. You forget and you forget. And it wasn't a kind of gradual forgetting. It was kind of quite a blank slate, literally every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Complete sympathy, and also the kind of terror of whether she wanted to know, whether she obviously wasn't happy in the state she was, and what she thought when she looked in the mirror is sooner or later she's going to wake up and she's going to see an old lady in the mirror, and in her head she's going to be young, and how is she going to react to that? But to actually have to relive the death of her son or whatever every day, it's horrendous, isn't it?
And without giving a spoiler away, there is a nice little happy ending to that side of things, which brings us neatly round. It's not too much of a spoiler, it's just I said there might be a nice happy ending. Because I did feel that, whereas Watson kind of brought that to one side, the sort of concluding thing was left very much in a kind of, you just don't know. Really, that was the sort of line. I think that's the sort of the perspective that we got there. Reading group questions, which I always thought was quite interesting, Jenny. These are the areas that went through. I mean, I thought that the line, Christine doesn't feel a strong sense of love for her husband, but wonders if that is normal after so many years of marriage. Do you think it's inevitable that a marriage changes in this way? That's quite an interesting leap, isn't it, in terms of where the book's coming from, suddenly getting into marriage guidance?
Well, yes, it's a very big general question, and I think you can only answer it subjectively.
Extraordinary. In the studio, we have been joined by Jordan from the University of Teesside. And from what you've heard, Jordan, does S.J. Watson's Before I Go to Sleep sound like the kind of book you might like to try out?
Definitely. I'm into more the real-life kind of books, problems that people face. Obviously, the woman in this book is facing some sort of issue. It's nice, it's enjoyable to read something that people do go through, because it makes you realise, more realistic rather than the magical books or
the magical books. magical books. I made the point sort of before we actually launched the show that for me it was not a case of Matt hates the humans, but as you rightly responded, Jenny, that was not a debut novel, and that was clearly a different line for that point of view. But at the same time, I still think if a push comes to shove, and again, taking away your good soul, I'd say that the Elver Man, Death of the Elver Man, was probably stronger in terms of really gripping you and working on that sort of basis. However, Rob, do you intend to finish the book, or is it a case
depends
of...
Depends how much you tell me about it. I'll leave this room. I was intending to finish it when I came in here this morning, yes. Yes, definitely.
Well, I think that's good, because, yes, it is one where, I have to say, it's probably a two-nighter, really, to in terms of working through it, because it does store, and I think you ended up with this, Jenny, the notion that you wanted to go on, you wanted to learn more, and yes, we did keep on going, but there were certain areas which I did feel were a little bit telegraphed, and I thought, well, unless they're really off base with this thing, I think there is a slight sort of non sequitur with respect to this character that's coming across from that point of view. No mentioning no names, Rob, but, you know, we're looking at that.
However, I haven't got it yet, so maybe it isn't as telegraphed as you think.
Well, that's okay. It's started for 10 next month, but it's marked out of 10 now. Did you see what we did there? Nice little clever sort of take on that. So, I don't know, Jenny, what your mark out of 10 for Before I Go to Sleep?
I would give it 8 out of 10, because as a debut novel, it's extremely impressive. What I felt disappointed about is that although Christine is a very good, well-rounded character, the others tend to be a bit more cardboard and in the background. They could have done with a bit more depth.
Mm. Rob?
Well, obviously Christine's as quick at reading every day as you two are. You say this is a two-nighter, because she has to read a journal every single day. She reads it incredibly quickly. Yes. So, but of what I've read so far, I'm going to say 9 out of 10.
Ah. Mm. And I was hovering and eyeing between a 7.5 and an 8, but I'll go for 8, because that would be the line for the reservations that we sort of worked through. And it wouldn't be fair to actually ask Jordan, because she hasn't actually just read the back cover. And we could have another subsection which actually says, just rate the back cover, but it wouldn't really be, I think.
That's a whole skill in itself. You have to write the back cover as well as a writer.
Yeah, precisely. Jenny, any news with respect to your own writing that's coming through now? Obviously, your books are available still. The Mothman is still around and so on, so that's available on Amazon. Any other new sort of alerts you can actually give? Any teasers?
Nothing yet. The first six first six chapters of the fourth book are completed. Mm. But I'm actually also toying with the idea of writing the memory book next. I almost finished one of the Somerset shorties.
Speaking about spoilers, I was very tempted to mention about the memory theme, but I thought, no. We've spoken about that at other sort of shows. It is there, but I did think, interesting. So, finite, Rob. Memory could be finite.
Right.
Or maybe like entropy.
All tends to disorder. We might need to buy more memory. Where do we get it from? Sheffield Wednesday playing Middlesbrough in the very near future. So that's On Your Bike meets Fly Me to the Moon. We should be doing something about that, but I'm sure all will be well with the world. Rob Nichols from Fly Me to the Moon, and of course, general all-round wonderful Middlesbrough person, Jenny Finch as well. It's your show. It's been a pleasure. How was that? Thanks, Jordan, for your contribution. That's it for Book of the Month for February 2015. I remember the year. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.